Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of From My Point of View. The Lakers are dead. The Celtics are dead. I feel a little bit better about the Knicks after what the Miami Heat have been doing to Boston. Melo retiring. Sixers fired Doc. And the Fast and Furious was basically Fast 10, part one of part three finale, was basically just The Dark Knight. Let's be real. I mean, Jason Momoa is just, he just did his best Joker impression. It was phenomenal movie, okay? If you, we're going to get into that at the, well, we'll save it till the end of the podcast, but it's like, if you hate these movies, you take yourself too seriously. Like, that's just how I gotta explain it to people. One of my good friends, Riley, who I went to go see with him and a couple other of my friends, shout out Matt and Eric, but they, I remember like years ago, they didn't get it. And I was like, nah, dude, you just gotta like shut your brain off and just enjoy the like impossibilities that happen in this movie. Like, just enjoy them, man. And he took that advice and he's loved them ever since. Like, all my friends have loved them ever since. If you just sit down and turn your, like, the first few are like more serious and like grounded in reality, because they're like street drag racers, and you know, they're also thieves who hijack tractor trailers on the highway and all that kind of stuff. And then obviously it gets more and more just like insane, and they become like special op agents and all that kind of shit. But when it starts to lean into that, you gotta embrace it. You have to embrace the absurdity of these movies. Alan Rickman, the Thad Castle from Blue Mountain State, or Alan Richson, I should say. Alan Richson, he's in it. He has a great part. Oh my, I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll talk about it at the end of the podcast, but the Yankees and the Mets are back. They're both playing unbelievable baseball. Yankees have won 14 of their last 19. The Blue Jays awoke a sleeping giant in Judge, who's just been, he was quietly tearing it up, and then obviously went on the IL. He came back, was playing well, and then after that Blue Jays series, he's just been on a tear for like the last 6 or 7 games. And the Yankees are playing really, really well. The Mets, they called up a couple of young guys, Mark Vientos and Francisco Alvarez. Was a while ago, a couple weeks ago they called him up. But the kids have been producing. They've had 2 electric wins against Cleveland, which, of course, is big news. Jason Kipnis, former teammate of Francisco Lindor in Cleveland, told, I think it was AJ Pierzynski on like some podcast that they have together or whatever, that the Mets have no leadership. That's why they were struggling. There's no one there to hold people accountable. And Pierzynski asked him, oh, like, you played with Lindor. How is he as a leader? And then Kipnis said, I'm going to repeat myself. There is no leadership on the Mets. So basically calling out Lindor, saying he's not a leader. But they took that to heart, obviously. They won this series against Cleveland. And they've been playing well. And they had been struggling. You know, they're closer to first place in the NL East than the Yankees are to first place in the AL East, but the Yankees have a much better record, well, you know, by 5 or 6 games. And they've just, both of them have been on the struggle bus, and it looks like they both finally got off, should go back to playing to the level of baseball that both of these rosters are capable of. This by no means, you know, negates the fact that I don't really think the Yankees are built to win a World Series with this current roster, but it's definitely less frustrating when they're at least playing winning baseball in the regular season, right? So we'll talk about them more in depth. And, of course, the Celtics and the Lakers are going to be the primary topics of this podcast, because they are about to both get swept by the Nuggets and the Heat. And then there's going to be a, there might be a long break. So let's get into that. And before we get into that, remember, if you sign up to Underdog Fantasy using promo code ANIMALHOUSE, you get 100% match deposit up to $100. Quick and easy download. Link is in the description. Again, 100% match deposit up to $100 when you use the promo code Animal House and sign up to Underdog Fantasy. Carmelo Anthony has announced his retirement from the NBA. Melo, 6-time All-NBA player. Just a scoring title. Unfortunately, you know, never reached the finals. Never was really able to get to the very, very tippy mountaintop. He came close a couple times in the Western Conference Finals. But 10-time All-Star, scoring champion, 6-time All-NBA. He's a member of the NBA 75th anniversary team and considered to be a easily top 10 scorer of all time. I mean, I think he's seventh or eighth on the all-time scoring list. Sensational basketball player. A part of, obviously, that unbelievable 2003 class. He went third overall to the Nuggets behind Darko Milicic. But him, Wade, Bosch, and, of course, LeBron at the top. They'll always be linked together, him and LeBron, from playing each other in high school at St. Vincent St. Mary in Oak Hill, where Melo went to Oak Hill. And, you know, all the way, he won a national championship at Syracuse. And getting into the league, really falling under the radar, low-key having just as good of a rookie year as LeBron, but just playing second fiddle there to him for the beginning of their careers for a while. He was a stud, man. He was one of the best scorers ever, dominating at will. He deserved more. He really did, Carmelo. He deserved more. He's one of my favorite players, probably one of my 5 favorite players ever. Like, he's great. T-Mac, Kobe, LeBron, Melo are also up there. Vince Carter. I don't know if I put Vince Carter in my top 5. T-Mac, definitely. Vince Carter's up there, though. Vince Carter's, if he's not 5, he's like 6 or 7. Like, he's up there. Yeah, I loved Melo. And when he came to the Knicks, man, I mean, obviously hindsight's 20/20. I think the Knicks trading for Carmelo Anthony at the trade deadline like that was definitely probably not the best move, just because you traded so many good young players who would have been so great around Melo. You know, in hindsight, they probably should have just said, hey, Melo, stick it out with Denver for the rest of the year, and we will give you a mega contract in the summer to come play for us. But they trade for him instead. They trade the farm for him instead. And, I mean, he, up until like the past 2 out of the past 3 years when the Knicks made the playoffs, he's been the only one to show any type of life for this franchise and to bring life to New York. He's a New York legend. You know, pessimists and haters will say, well, the Knicks didn't win anything with him. You know, he was worthless, blah, blah, blah. He didn't bring what he should have to New York. And then those people, again, they're all losers and haters. He brought a life to the city that has not been done up until this past year, really, with Jalen Brunson and the Knicks winning a playoff series and advancing to the second round and playing the Heat in a hard-fought series. Melo did that. Like, Melo, it was supposed to be Melo and Stoudemire, and Stoudemire had a good run for a hot minute, but then not much after that. Like, injuries kind of started plaguing him, and he wasn't the same guy. But man, those were fun teams, and it was a pleasure to be able to watch Carmelo Anthony for as many years as I did in a New York Knicks uniform. Obviously, he got a pretty bad shake towards the end of his career there with, it seemed like, you know, so many scrubs getting contracts and getting signed to be role players, and no one was giving Melo another shot. I wish he had a little bit of a last hurrah, but it is what it is. You know, he walked away from the game, I think, with his head held high for the most part. He'll be remembered as one of the best of this generation. You know, I think he's obviously a first ballot Hall of Famer. There's no doubt about that. He'll be remembered as a T-Mac. He did more in his career than T-Mac did in his, and people look back on T-Mac rather fondly and with a little bit of a glimmer in their eye of what could have been because of those injuries that plagued him later in his career. But Melo's the best, man. I love Melo, and I wish him nothing but the best. So congratulations to Carmelo Anthony. New York Knicks legend, New York legend, NBA legend. First ballot Hall of Famer, no doubt about it. Now, with the teams remaining in the playoffs here, the Celtics are dead. The Celtics are the deadest of the dead I've ever seen in my entire life. They did not show up to play. Down 2-0, backs against the wall, and they got curb stomped. I mean, Missoula had to bench the starters with like 8 minutes left in the game. That's how bad they were getting smacked. They were down by like 30. It's like, all right, clearing out the bench, 8 minutes left. Horrible, horrible effort. Missoula should be fired. I don't care what kind of contract he has. He is a bad coach. Now, this particular loss is not on him, but I would say the series as a whole, he has just been... And we knew, this was going to happen between him and Spoelstra. I said in the series against the Knicks, like Thibodeau and Spoelstra, they duked it out for a coaching battle. Like they were coaching their asses off, but the Knicks offense just could not compete with what Miami was putting up. This, however, is like Spoelstra masterclass. I'm going to run circles around you and point and laugh at you the entire time. So last night's stat line, Tatum and Jaylen Brown went a combined 12 for 35 from the field. 12 for 35 from the field, 1 for 14 from 3, 26 points. And then, you know, everyone else wasn't much better, obviously. But Jimmy Butler in the Heat, like Jimmy Butler didn't even score. He had 16, 8, and 6. Gabe Vincent had 29 points. Strus had 10. Duncan Robinson had 22. Caleb Martin had 18. So again, Spoelstra said it was disrespectful to keep referring to these guys as like the undrafted role players who were making a splash. But once again, the undrafted role players were making a splash. Like Jaylen Brown. He had some words again, like Jaylen Brown looks like he's just completely checked out of this team. That this was just something like he's just like over it. It's just, this is clearly soured. Here's what Jaylen Brown had to say, after everything that happened in the post-game press conference.
Yeah, we struggled to get stops, but to their credit, they're playing well above their means. They're balling right now, and I got to give them respect. Gabe Vincent, Martin, Strus, Duncan Robinson, you know, guys that we should be able to keep under control are playing their ass off.
So that last bit is important there. Guys that we should be able to keep under control are playing their ass off. He's completely right. Like, this is not, in my opinion, like Jaylen Brown taking a shot at the Heat. Like, hey, these guys really aren't that good. They're just playing out of their mind right now. While that's partly right, like, they're good players. They're very good NBA players, no doubt about it. They're excellent players in terms of the system in Miami that they're asked to be in. They do everything like it's top form that they're asked to do. Shoot the ball, play hard defense. Like, except for Duncan Robinson, not really a great defender. But he shoots. Like, that's what he's there to shoot the basketball. And he shot it really well last night. All those guys, like, they're shooters, play tough defense, right? Play within the system. And they balled out last night. And it's more of Jaylen Brown saying, like, hey, we're supposed to be one of the best defensive teams in the league, and we can't stop anybody. We can't stop anybody. Like, if Jimmy Butler was doing this game in and game out, you get a little bit more of a pass because you're like, oh, it's Jimmy Butler. Or it's Bam Adebayo, right? But these are guys that's where he's like, they're supposed to, basically, you know, they're supposed to be role players, and they're the ones that are absolutely dominating the Celtics for the most part. Obviously, Jimmy Butler and Bam, they're great, and they do their thing. But especially, like, in Game 3, those guys dominated the game. And I think that's Jaylen Brown more of saying, like, hey, we suck. We can't stop anybody right now. Because to say, you know, these guys aren't playing above their means, you'd be lying, you know, because they are. They are playing above their means. No one looks at these guys and are like, oh, yeah, Gabe Vincent, he can get you 29 any given night. Like, no, he's that's not what he does. That's not his role on the team. So when he's lighting you up, Duncan Robinson's lighting you up for 20-plus, like, you're screwed. You're not going to win that game. But the Celtics were just, they were pitiful. Pitiful. In a must-win game three, just downright atrocious. And, like, they just, it's not looking good for them in terms of the future. Now, obviously, this series is over, right? I think both of these series are over. So, with the Celtics, now you got to look at it and say, okay, how do we approach what's about to happen? First of all, obviously, if you're a coach and you're a player, you're not thinking this way. You got to think one game at a time. Try and get a win under your belt. If you get swept, that's obviously worst case scenario, super embarrassing. But you are, like, looking down the barrel of a gun here in terms of the future of this, of the team, of that, how it's currently constructed. Joe Mazzulla is a bad coach. He is not a coach that is worthy of or talented enough to be coaching in the Eastern Conference Finals, let alone the NBA Finals. This Boston roster is stacked for the most part. They are the ones that have gotten them there, which, to credit Ime Udoka here, for big of an idiot as he is a guy that suddenly his stock has skyrocketed because now he's with the Rockets. The Rockets signed him to be their new head coach, and they're feeling pretty good about themselves because some people were looking at Udoka. I might be one of those guys too. I'm sure you can go back and find the tape, but I don't really think I gave Udoka that much credit. But Ime Udoka got a lot more out of this Celtics team than what Joe Mazzulla is getting out of the Celtics team. And I was the one who was saying, like, well, Udoka, you know, he doesn't have any experience. He's not that good of a coach. He's riding the coattails of the talent. He coached them pretty well, very well by comparison to what Mazzulla is coaching them at. And then, you know, Steve Kerr and the Warriors are Steve Kerr and the Warriors, so he couldn't really get that much, you know, get as much out of them. And obviously Tatum didn't play well in the finals last year. But Mazzulla is just, it's like, oh my God, man. The discrepancy, I don't even know how to describe it. It's so large between Mazzulla and Spoelstra, it's like not even, it's not fair. The coaching, the mind behind these coaches is just next level from Spoelstra to Mazzulla. He can't even sniff it, you know? So it's just not, I don't think it's going to work. I mean, you can obviously ride with Mazzulla and just kind of figure it out. And ideally he gets more of a handle on, like, what to expect when you make deep playoff runs like this. To me, it feels like Jaylen Brown is gone. It just feels like this dude has had enough. And I've been saying it for the past few months, really, for like the second half of this year, I've been saying the problem between Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, they're boy, like, they're friends. They could be friends. And they've said they're friends. They said they're boys. I believe that. I wholeheartedly believe that. But sometimes it comes down to your career and your business, and you got to maybe consider different options. Jason Tatum is the number one boy. He is, to quote Logan Roy from Secession, because I'm on that Secession grind. Last night's episode was unbelievable. The funeral episode was just some of the best television. This entire season has been some of the best television I've ever watched. But Logan Roy calling Kendall, he's like, you're my number one boy. You're my number one boy. That's the Celtics to Jason Tatum. That's what it is. No matter, and to be completely fair, Tatum's had like one good game this series. Jaylen Brown has had zero good games this series. He's not, Jaylen Brown is not playing particularly well. But it doesn't matter how well he plays. It doesn't matter what he does. It doesn't matter if he has 50. You know who's getting the last shot? Jason Tatum. Like, that's just the way it is, bro. And I mean, I thought it was funny. I thought it was a joke when Tatum said, "I'm one of the best players in the world," after he shot like 5 of 21, but, you know, he hit like 3 threes at the end of the game to beat Philly in game 6. I thought that was funny. I thought it was a joke, but I laughed about it later that night. But that's the thing. Like, it doesn't matter how well Jaylen Brown's playing. The last shot's probably always going to go to Tatum. Tatum's always going to be the face of the Celtics. He's always going to be the golden child, the number one boy, right? So, I mean, I think at some point, like, yeah, Jaylen Brown, he's a great player. And I think now he gets a lot more respect than he used to in terms of, like, in the media. I mean, real NBA fans and guys with basketball knowledge know that Jaylen Brown has been a very good basketball player for, you know, several years now. But I feel like in terms of mainstream stuff, he's getting some more recognition as, like all people are hopping on board. It's like, oh, the gap between Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum's not that big, which it, I don't think it is. You know, I really enjoy Jaylen Brown as a basketball player, man. I think he's sensational. Second team All-NBA this year, rightfully so. Jason Tatum was first team, sure. So, two All-NBA guys, and it's just not working. Like, you've been running it back with them, more or less the same roster, maybe a couple other role players here and there. But, like, I understand why you wouldn't want to blow that up. Again, like, just think about how many people have blown things up, or like a guy leaves or whatever, and then it's like, oh, what if? You know, what if? But there's not, I don't think there is a what if anymore with this team. I think this is it. This is it. This is your peak, right? Like, you can get to the Eastern Conference Finals every year, maybe even make the finals, but like, it doesn't look like this team, at least currently constructed, is going to be able to get over that hump with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. And sometimes the offense with them, when they're in together, just kind of devolves into my turn, your turn. Like, we saw that with Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, who, after the Suns traded away, you know, two of their best role players with Bridges and Cam Johnson, suddenly they have no depth and they don't have any guys that can really step up and fill in those minutes. So what happened in the playoffs against the Nuggets? It devolved into a my turn, your turn situation with Durant and Booker, which is not a formula for winning basketball, obviously. You have to be able to rely on your role players to hit shots and to create offense, because if it just goes into like, okay, I'm going to shoot, now you're going to shoot, now you're going to shoot, the defense doesn't really have to do anything but lock in on those two players. And again, since Tatum's the golden child, if anyone's going to leave this team, it's going to be Jaylen Brown. Now, he is eligible. He has 1 year left on his contract, and then he's an unrestricted free agent. Because he made All-NBA team this year, second to last year of his extension. Next year is his last year, like I just said. The Celtics can offer him like the Supermax or whatever, whereas other teams would not be able to offer him as much money. Now, the Celtics could easily boof this, you know? And I think with the new CBA rules, it might lead them to doing that, because the new CBA basically is not really letting you have three superstar contracts on a team anymore. It's like the anti-Warriors CBA contract, where, you know, they had Steph and Klay and Draymond, who they drafted all those guys, gave them all contracts, and then they were still able to go and sign Kevin Durant for 2 years, whatever it was, or 3 years with a player option after two. So it's like, it's concerning with the Celtics, because now you're like, okay, well, if we lock up Jaylen Brown, how are we going to fill out the roster? Like, what are the moves we could possibly make? Or my theory is they try and come in, they lowball him, you know, $5-7 million less than what the max is. And he says, okay, fuck off, and demands a trade. And then that's the end of it. And then they trade him for, obviously they could trade him for a huge deal. Like, I think a lot of teams would be willing to give up a lot. If I'm the Knicks, I'm considering, let's see. I mean, what, Randall, Quickly, and like a first, two firsts for Jaylen Brown. I'm just spitballing. Don't laugh at me. I know a lot of people right now would be like, Julius Randle, oh, I don't want him. But the Celtics don't, like, they could use a guy like Randle to be a secondary scorer. And if Tatum's the guy, and you got to surround him with shooters, you got to surround him with, I mean, he's a great rebounder. So just surround him with more shooters and role players. You got to be able to give him almost like the LeBron package, where it's surrounded with shooters and guys who play defense, and figure it out from there. And Jaylen Brown, I'm manifesting Jaylen Brown to the Knicks. I would love him to be a New York Knick, but it's gonna take a lot of things to happen for him to be in a uniform other than Boston. But just as a feeling, and I'm not the only one who gets this feeling, like I've heard several different people talk about how it just seems like Jaylen Brown has soured on this team, on this staff, this ownership, and is just like, you need a new scenery. And that happens a lot. You know, I'm not saying this is just like, oh, Jaylen Brown's the only guy who feels this way. When you have a really great team, like the Celtics have, and you can't get over the hump, You're running into the same wall year after year after year. Eastern Conference Finals, Eastern Conference Finals, Eastern Conference Finals, Finals, Eastern Conference Finals, Eastern Conference Finals. Like, you're getting there. You're getting to, like, the stop right before a championship. And in the case of last year, they finally get over it. And they go to the finals and they lose to the Warriors. And it's frustrating because you know that this team is really talented and has the makings of a championship team. They just can't get there. After so many years of having the same result after the same result, people get frustrated. People get annoyed. Like, that's why even sometimes when a head coach is really good and the team is performing really well, ownership sometimes decides to change it up. Let's get a new guy in there and see if he can't crack the code, right? It happens with players too. Like, these guys have been together they have been together their entire careers, Tatum and Brown, and Boston was in the shitter, right, for the most part, outside of like that 1 year with Isaiah Thomas, but Boston was not in a great spot, and they rebuilt their team after like the Paul Pierce, KG, Rondo, Ray Allen era. They rebuilt their team, they hit multiple draft picks, they signed key guys, and here they are, back to being one of the best teams in the NBA. They just can't get over the hump. So sometimes it's just a change of scenery. Like, guys just crave that. Let me go somewhere else. Let me try and work with other players. Let me try and do my own thing with someone else, because maybe this is the ceiling. It doesn't get any higher than this. So that's something that they have to address. I think the Celtics offseason is probably the number one team that I'm looking at to be like, let's see what they do. It's going to be real spicy, in my opinion. So we'll see how they go and what they do. And maybe some big changes on the horizon for them, because they have the coaching situation. Then obviously, how do they fix the roster? How do they change it up? And this is a fun fact. I'm gonna say this is true. I just saw it on Twitter, but Jimmy Butler's 33. Joe Mazzulla's only 34 years old. This is from TikTok. Have you heard it? I said Twitter, but it's a TikTok. Jeremy Taché, I don't know, on Twitter, he says, fun fact, Celtics coach Joe Mazzulla's college team, West Virginia, fell in the Big East tournament to the hands of Jimmy Butler's Marquette Golden Eagles. That would be pretty crazy. Big if true, as they say. The other team that's dead, the Lakers. So in a twist of fate, when everyone was like, oh my God, the Lakers and Celtics have a chance to meet up in the finals to decide who has championship number 18, yada, yada, yada. No, they're probably both going to get swept. Listen, if anything, this series, both of these series go max 6 games, max. That's me being generous. Maybe 5 games. I think a lot of people are expecting sweeps. The Celtics looked absolutely dejected, so I think they probably have a higher probability of getting swept than the Lakers, because the Celtics are also playing Game 4 in Miami, down 3-0, as opposed to the Lakers playing Game 4 in Los Angeles, down 3-0. So the Lakers at least have home court advantage there, at least a little bit. But the Lakers, I mean, they've had opportunities to win a couple games this series and just have not been able to close out. Jamal Murray has been on fire. In game 3, I think it was, he entered the fourth quarter with like 14 points and he ended with 31. So just an insane fourth quarter, could not miss. Three-pointers, mid-range, turnarounds, whatever it is, floaters, like everything was falling in for him. And he's really been a menace all series, like even more so than Jokic. I know Jokic had that unbelievable, crazy 30-point, 20-rebound triple-double in game 1. And the Lakers almost completed their comeback, and they just couldn't get it there at the end. And the Celtics were, I mean, the Nuggets were able to hold on to win. Jokic has been great this series. Do not get me wrong. He has been sensational. But to me, Jamal Murray has been the X factor. Like, Jamal Murray just going out there and not being able to miss for essentially 2 straight games. Especially, I mean, in game 3, that fourth quarter, like, he was being held in check. And it was a game where he wasn't really playing well. Jokic wasn't having a super big impact. But LeBron and AD were just not getting it done, and the rest of the Lakers were just not getting it done. D'Angelo Russell has been basically unplayable this series. So it was a close game. It was a close game, a game that the Lakers should have taken advantage. They should have been able to take advantage and get ahead, and they just couldn't. So, but credit to the Nuggets, at least a little bit. You know, the Lakers just weren't hitting their shots. So come the fourth quarter, it's a close game. Then all of a sudden, you have this run of like 2 minutes where it's Murray 3, Murray 3, Murray 2, Michael Porter Jr. 3, Murray 3, Murray 3, free throw, free throw, free throw, free throw from Jamal Murray. Doing basically all the legwork for the Nuggets. Lakers have like 2 baskets to answer in that stretch. Now all of a sudden, it went from being, you know, a 2-point game either way to the Nuggets are up by 11 points. And that was it. That was the end of that game. So Murray has been the X factor. When he steps up and he's hitting these big shots, these big threes, it feels like the Nuggets are unstoppable. Because it's like, yeah, you're containing Jokic, sure, but oh yeah, here's Jamal Murray. He'll give you 25 to 30 points on good shooting. Michael Porter Jr., he has been, Michael Porter Jr., Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Bruce Brown, Murray, even Jeff Green to a degree, all of them have been hitting their shots. And obviously, this is not accounting for Jokic being arguably the best player on the floor. Or probably the best. I mean, in this series, he's been the best player on the floor. So the Lakers are looking rough. I think they could definitely get this game here at home. But, you know, then you got to go back to Denver. I think this series is over in 5. I think the Celtics are going to get swept. And then you'll have the Celtics, or the Nuggets will get 8 or 9 days off, because the finals start on June 1st, no matter what. So if both of these teams get swept, the Nuggets and Lakers are playing tonight, Monday, as I'm recording this, and then Tuesday night, when this episode is out, the Celtics and Heat will be playing. So let's say if the Nuggets win tonight and the Heat win tomorrow, and they both complete the sweeps, which apparently has never been done before in the finals, the conference finals of each conference. No one's ever, there hasn't been two sweeps, which is crazy. But the Nuggets will have 9 days off and the Heat will have 8 days off if they both complete the sweeps on Monday night and Tuesday night. Because the finals start June 1st, no matter what. If the Lakers prolong it, then the Heat sweep, like I'm predicting, if the Nuggets win in five and the Heat win in four, like I said, then the Heat will have 8 days off and the Nuggets will have like 6 or 7 days off. They'll still have a week off. So like there's going to be a ton of time that these teams are going to be able to rest and prep for the finals against each other. Obviously, Malone and Spoelstra. I like the edge to Spoelstra there, but I think it's pretty clear that the Nuggets have a much more well-rounded team. That being said, the Heat, this entire Eastern Conference playoff run that they've had, every series they go into, it's like the Bucks are the number one seed and they have the best player. They should win. Nope, they lose in five. The Knicks have a good roster. This is probably the, I think most people could agree, that was probably the most even matchup in terms of roster versus roster. The Knicks have had the most success against the Heat. And yes, Jimmy Butler got a little banged up in that series, but the Knicks were able to win two games. And it's just, the Knicks offense just couldn't compete with Miami. So you have that. And then going into the Celtics series, like all that nonsense about like percentage that the Celtics win are like 97%. Like ESPN put out that stat into the water. It's just, I think everyone could agree. Again, the Celtics have the better roster. They have the two best players in, I mean, Jimmy Butler, I think is the best player in the series, obviously. He's been on a tear. But Tatum and Brown are first and second team All-NBA. And they are, the Celtics are one of the best defensive teams. They could score. Like, yeah, it probably would be hard fought because, you know, you date back to last year. It was a hard fought series. So you should have expected more of the same. But now they're just getting absolutely steamrolled. Steamrolled. So you can't even go into a finals matchup of the Nuggets and the Heat like, oh, the Nuggets have the better roster. They should be favorites to win, and they have Nikola Jokic. But the Heat have just been playing unbelievable basketball. They're phenomenally coached. Everyone is playing their role to the utmost degree, and they have Jimmy Butler, who's like a dog in the playoffs. Like he's a different person. If it comes down to that, I will be riding hard for the Miami Heat. I want Jimmy Butler to get his ring. I think he absolutely deserves it more than anybody, really, in these playoffs. Jimmy Butler deserves a ring. Of course, I hitched my wagon to the Lakers and LeBron James. I wanted to see LeBron go for his fifth title. That seems highly unlikely. It's just a matter of who you prefer. Like, if Jokic wins a ring and the Nuggets win a ring, salute to them. Good for them. But, like, I'm pulling for Jimmy Butler. I really am. He deserves it, dude. Like, he absolutely deserves it. As for the Lakers, their offseason is going to be interesting. Austin Reeves probably might get a contract big enough that the Lakers can't match. LeBron's getting older. AD, how do you optimize that? There's the looming threat of course, LeBron just leaving after next year. I think his contract is up and going. He timed that out pretty perfectly because Bronny is going to USC and he wants to play with LeBron. I mean, he wants to play with his son. So he has so after next year, he has a player option. So he's playing 2023. The 2023-2024 season as a Laker, and then in the 2024-2025 season at age 40, after next year, he has a player option to opt out, which he will most likely exercise if Bronny's like, yeah, Dad, let's play together for like the first year of my career or whatever, 2 years of my career, however long LeBron wants to play with his son. So, you know, that's a concern if you're the Lakers, obviously. You have some of these other guys, I'm sure. I think D'Angelo Russell can be a free agent. Which, again, he's been borderline unplayable this series, which is tough for the Lakers. Rui Hachimura, I'm not sure what his situation is, but big questions. Like, you made a lot of great moves at the deadline, a lot of great moves. If you come up short, then you just got to reassess. You have an aging superstar in LeBron. Anthony Davis obviously is a sensational talent, but it has struggled to play 60-plus games in a regular season over the past several years. And then you have these role players where it's like, who do you have to choose. Who do you bring back? Who do you let walk? So big offseason for the Lakers as well. You could throw them in the same hat as the Celtics. Both of them are going to have very interesting offseasons to see what exactly goes on. But looking down the barrel of this gun of the playoffs, of the NBA Finals, it looks like it's going to be Nuggets and Heat. I'm sure the NBA really wanted Lakers-Celtics for the ratings. If you're not going to watch it because you just don't like basketball that much, just say that. You're a casual. It's okay to be a casual. Just say you're a casual. But in terms of actual, like, optics of the talent between these two teams and who's going to, you know, who's going to make the best series, yeah, I mean, the Celtics and Lakers would have been great, don't get me wrong, but the Nuggets and Heat is going to be a tough series. It really is. So I'm looking forward to that very much. Also, with LeBron's thing, there is a chance, obviously, Bronny is not one and done at USC. So if that's the case, I would imagine LeBron would probably just opt into his contract with the Lakers for that player option. And then when he's an unrestricted free agent, he figures it out from there at age 41. But he's a master of taking care of his body. He knows what it takes. He knows how to perform as he's getting older. So I would expect him to play at least 1 year with Bronny, as he intends. Other NBA news, Doc Rivers fired by the Sixers. That happened early last week, rightfully so. His time with the Sixers probably should have been up last year. This does not necessarily change anything. James Harden is still leaving. It's like you're not like happy he's fired, but you knew it was something that needed to happen. You know, it's like one of those things. But you just, they need to move on. Doc Rivers, like, by far the most game seven losses in his the history of, like, a coach, the careers of a coach. So just brutal stuff. Harden's gone. Sixers have a lot to move forward to, have a lot to consider moving forward. But firing Doc Rivers, something that needed to happen. And then, of course, we're back. NBA lottery rigged, of course, right? So the Spurs, the Pistons, and the Rockets, I think it was, had the three highest percent chance of getting the number one overall pick. The Spurs got it. Of course, Victor Wembanyama already declared basically the number one overall pick. So it was basically a chance to see who's going to draft Victor Wembanyama. Spurs have only had the number one overall pick twice before, and they drafted Duncan Robinson, Hall of Famer, and Tim Duncan, Hall of Famer. Tim Duncan, I should also say, top eight player all time. So pretty crazy that now you have this guy who people are gassing up to be one of the best prospects of all time, and the Spurs happen to get the number one overall pick. Very lucky for Victor Wembanyama to go to the Spurs. Solid organization. Greg Popovich, obviously, phenomenal coach and a guy who was able to teach and coach Tim Duncan and David Robinson, win multiple championships. Like, you're looking great now. You're feeling great now if you're a San Antonio Spurs fan, who the Spurs have been a generational franchise, a franchise that I grew up, who they were always an excellent team, and for the past 4 years, they've been horrible, and they've missed the playoffs all 4 years since the retirement of Duncan and Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili. So the Spurs land the number one overall pick, the Hornets land the number two overall pick, Trailblazers 3, Rockets 4, Pistons 5, the Pistons winning a whopping 17 games this year, Cade Cunningham getting injured. 17 games, and you get the number 5 overall pick. Definitely a shot in the foot. Definitely a sting to the franchise, like, just being absolutely horrific this year, not even getting a top three pick. Gotta be demoralizing. To round out the rest of the lottery, Magic at 6, Pacers at 7, Wizards at 8, Jazz at 9. The Mavericks luck out, those rat bastards. They get the 10th overall pick. They're, if it was landed outside the top 10, it would have been a New York Knicks first round pick. But instead, we get the Mavs pick next year. And the Mavericks now, they keep their first round pick this year. The Knicks do not have a first round pick. So Mavericks 10, Magic again at 11, so they have the 6th and 11th pick. Thunder at 12, Raptors at 13, and the Pelicans at 14. So that is the NBA lottery. In terms of the top three, it's going to be Victor Wembanyama, and then two combinations, of it's going to be either Scoot Henderson or Brandon Miller at 2, and then whoever's left at 3, the Trailblazers will get the pick. However, the Trailblazers have announced that they are shopping the 3rd overall pick because they, quote, want to maximize the rest of Damian Lillard's career. They are making the 3rd overall pick available. I think, personally, this is the worst thing they could possibly do. Damian Lillard is aging. He's not getting any younger, as they say. Was injured at the beginning of this year, came back, lit it up. 32 points per game over the course. I think he played like 50-something, 57, 58 games. 32 points a game, like he's a stud. He could still score with the best of them. He's still an absolute tank. But the Blazers are just not good. Here's why. I know I've seen a lot of Trailblazers fans being like, we owe it to Damian Lillard, his loyalty. We owe it to him to trade the pick, try and get someone in there, build the roster a little bit more, and make a push for this season. Like, make a push to be a contender. Here is my rebuttal to that. There is no player, not one player, that you could get for the number 3 overall pick, however you package it, if you trade players in the 3 pick, the 3 pick and other first and players, whatever it is, there is no player that you can go out there and get right now that is going to make you a contender in the Western Conference as for the Portland Trailblazers. None. There's not a single one that suddenly gets you, like, you're not, like, it's not like, oh, your roster is close. Like, yeah, Damian Lillard was a little banged up. We just missed the playoffs. But if he's healthy for a year, we add in a couple other guys in the offseason, like, we're right there in the mix. No, you're not. You're flat out not. This roster is not ready to compete. So my thing of, like, oh, we're going to trade the number 3 overall pick and whatever else to try and get some guys in there to make a push with Damian Lillard for the playoffs, it's not viable. The Blazers' time with Damian Lillard, in my opinion, should be over. And I understand Lillard's like, I'm a loyal guy, I want to stay in Portland, yada, yada, yada. He's hurting the franchise doing that. He should accept that his time in Portland is done. They are never going to win. If he wants to stay there throughout his career, then fine. But do not make them trade the 3rd overall pick to appease you and try and get a championship push. Let them rebuild while you're still on the roster, okay? Rebuild, get draft picks, maybe sign some younger guys, whatever it is. But there is no reason for you to trade this pick. Absolutely not. Because there's no one on the market right now that you can get that's suddenly going to make you a contender. No team that's contending right now is going to trade like an extra super, like Jaylen Brown, for example. Let's say Jaylen Brown wanted to leave. The Celtics aren't trading Jaylen Brown to the Blazers for, like, a couple picks. That's just, it's not going to happen. They're going to trade him to a team that really has, like, some nice role players, but nothing else. Right? Like, and even then, Jaylen Brown to the Trailblazers, that doesn't get you there, in my opinion. But, I mean, it makes them really, really good. But it's just not going to make you a championship team. And also, Jaylen Brown probably doesn't want to be traded to the fucking Portland Trailblazers. So, if I'm the Blazers, I am hoping Scoot Henderson falls to me at number three. I am trading Damian Lillard to a contender for a Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Donovan Mitchell-esque trade. Multiple first-round picks, multiple good, solid role players. I am getting that package from them in exchange for Damian Lillard, and I am taking Scoot Henderson at three overall, assuming that Brandon Miller goes to the Hornets because they have LaMelo and a couple other guards there already. I don't really see them taking Scoot Henderson, who is a point guard, when they have LaMelo Ball. Take Brandon Miller, big, long wing, can shoot the three, stretch the floor. He'll just get better with age. I'm not as high on Brandon Miller as some people, but undoubtedly he is a guy that people are going to be like, okay, yeah, he's a top prospect. So he'd fit in with the Hornets roster nicely. Take Scoot Henderson three overall for the Blazers, pair him with Simons, and move forward. Get your picks and your other role players from the Lillard trade and just start the rebuild. Because the whole, let's try and get Damian Lillard championship, it's over. It is over. You had the time. You tried. You really did. You got close. Just wasn't in the cards. And sometimes that's the way the chips fall. But regardless, I think it would be a mistake for the Blazers to trade that pick for Jaylen Brown. Okay, baseball, and then Fast Five. Or Fast Five. Fast Ten. Double it. Give the next person. The Blue Jays and John Schneider, they awoke a sleeping giant in Aaron Judge, who's just been on an absolute tear since that series. The Yankees have won 14 of their last 19. They're playing unbelievable baseball, as are the Mets, who seem to have turned it around slightly. So both of these teams got off to bad starts. Not the starts that they expected. Both of them banged up. Scherzer and Verlander have already had a stint each on the IL, and then Scherzer got suspended for the sticky stuff. Yankees, their entire rotation gets banged up. Domingo Herman gets suspended for sticky stuff. Judge hits the IL. Stanton, he's back though. Stanton, still on the IL. Donaldson has his, he's on the IL, and then he has a setback because he cut his hand or something like that. It's been a whole mess. Finally, the Yankees DFA Aaron Hicks. He's been an eyesore in that lineup for the past 2 years, I would say. At least year and a half. He's been dreadful. He hasn't been able to hit. His effort has plunged to a minimum. He hasn't been a good fielder, and that was like a plus for him. You know, he was a good center fielder, even if he was struggling at the plate. Then he couldn't do either, so it's just been awful. And they finally DFA'd him. They finally got the stomach to be like, all right, we'll eat the cash that's on the rest of this contract, and we will DFA him because we can't have this guy rostered anymore. Thank God. Thank God. Step in the right direction. World Series back on for the Yankees. And for the Mets, the young guys, Mark Vientos, Brett Beatty, they've been playing well. Francisco Alvarez, Lindor, and Alonso had a huge series against the Guardians. So big time switch. And then obviously Scherzer and Verlander are back and healthy pitching. So things are looking up for both teams here. Fast 10. So the Fast 10 is now basically, that was just the Dark Knight. Jason Momoa is, whatever you think about the movies, Jason Momoa himself was an excellent villain. They tie his backstory into the fact that his father was the one who, when they robbed the vault from the banks in Rio de Janeiro, that bank, that was his father that The Rock killed on the at the end. He's just walking on the bridge and he just shoots him. That is Jason Momoa's dad, and Jason Momoa ends up knocked off a cliff by Dom, because he's the one driving the car with the turret in it. So they retconned him in to be that kind of villain, and he's been spending all these past years gathering up information and intel about Dominic Toretto and his family, their strengths and weaknesses, and this elaborate plan to destroy him. Now, he wears a purple suit in one encounter. He's skipping around. He's laughing. He's dancing. He's talking to himself. There's in the beginning when he tries to blow up the Vatican. He's like, "All right, boys." He's talking to his two henchmen behind him. He's like, "All right, boys, what are we gonna blow up?" And they don't answer. And he looks back. He's like, "The Vatican. I'll do it, but you guys are going to hell." Like he's basically talking to himself. It's so funny. He's just like super playful and but also evil and maniacal, just like the Joker. And Dominic Toretto created him. It's Dom's greatest villain is the one that he created, Batman and Joker, right? Dominic Toretto lifting up a car off its side from on the road with one arm. Inhuman strength for a human being, like Batman, right? He's got his family is. You know, they're not actually his family by blood, but they are his family, just like the Bat family. The Bat family is Bruce Wayne, is Batman's family, even though none of them are related by blood. It's just shit like that that's, like, crazy. It's crazy, crazy, crazy coincidences, or maybe it wasn't a coincidence. Maybe it was planned to be that way. But this was, obviously, the beginning of the end, or is it the road to the end begins? Was like the tagline for this movie. So this is a part one of three. The Rock, who was rumored to not be coming back and who Vin Diesel like pleaded with to come back, is in fact back. He shows up in the after credits scene, also being targeted by Jason Momoa's character. And it is, I think, is Dante is his name. So The Rock will be. And Jason Statham shows up at the end of the first movie, too, to help the remnants of Dom's family try and get back to Dom. So I have a strong feeling that it'll be a Hobbs and Shaw plus Dom situation in the second movie. Because at the end of the first movie, we leave on a cliffhanger with Dante blowing up a dam and water about to completely encapsulate Dom and his son, Brian, Lil B, as they call him. They don't show you what happens there. They don't show you the bombs actually explode. And then before that, there's a, you know, cargo plane with Tyrese, Ludacris, Natalie Emmanuel, those characters, and who else? There's someone else in that plane, I think. Oh, Han. Han's in that plane. And it's Dom versus Dante. And then you have Alan Rickman's character, who is now the new head of the agency. Brie Larson also appears. She is Mr. Nobody's daughter. She helps Dom out a little bit. But then Alan Rickman, who's the real head of the agency, he ends up helping Dom on the bridge to escape Dante and save Brie Larson, Mr. Nobody's daughter. Then at this moment, when Alan Rickman's there to rendezvous with Dom, he shoots a bazooka into the cargo plane that's carrying Han, Tyrese, and Ludacris. I forget their actual names in the movies. I've seen all these movies and I just forget their names when I'm talking about them. But they are shot out of the plane and the plane is going down, it's going down, it's going down, and it curves around a mountain and you see an explosion. They do not show the bodies. They do not show them actually blowing up. So my best guess is they escape at the last minute before the plane is destroyed. Dom obviously does not know that. And oh, by the way, before this, when Dante actually captures Lil B, John Cena, who plays Dom's brother in this movie, Jacob, he sacrifices himself to stop a brigade of cars that are trying to attack Dom. There's a giant explosion there. They give him a send-off where he's like flipping the car over and he holds on to the chain, the silver cross that they have. He holds on to this chain and he kind of like lets go of the wheel. Total like Jax Teller, Sons of Anarchy moment. But the car explodes. There's a big explosion with all these other cars. Again, they do not show the body of Jacob. But Dom just drives away and continues to try and save his son, which he does up until like the very end with this, you know, this damn situation with the bombs on side of it. So Dante has planned for all of this. Alan Richman, the head of the agency, obviously does not like Dom and his family because he feels like they have tainted the reputation of the agency and have been able to get away with all these kind of things. He has a great line in the beginning when he's describing Dom and his crew as, "If it defies God and gravity, they've done it twice." Or if it defies God and physics, they've done it twice, which is so spot on, obviously, right? With all the crazy shit that they've been doing, especially in the past, like, 3 or 4 movies, plus Hobbs and Shaw. It's just completely out of pocket and out of control now. And this guy, Alan Richman, who's now the head of the agency, is fully aware of that, right? And you also have Cypher, who's Charlize Theron, and Michelle Rodriguez. They are, Letty, they are in a prison and they break out, but they're just in like the middle of Antarctica. And at the end, when they finally get to where the destination is, a giant submarine breaks out from the underneath the ice, and Gal Gadot is the one who pops out of the submarine looking for them. So they brought back Han, now they brought back Gal Gadot, whatever. Her character, she was dead, but Han was also dead, and now Han's back. So, if they just brought back two characters, Han's been back for a couple movies, but they brought him back, and now they brought back another dead character. Like, obviously, you know, Dom's crew is not dead. I don't really believe Jacob is dead either, but the way this sets this up kind of to be is that part one was basically them losing. It's them losing. It's Dom probably thinking that everyone is dead, and it's just him and his son versus Dante, and he's just trying to keep his son alive so Dante doesn't kill them. And the second movie is going to be Dom plus Hobbs and Shaw, and then they can get reunited maybe with Letty, and Cypher helps them, and then Gal Gadot's character, whatever her name is, I don't even remember, but they'll probably all link up. It's definitely going to be a heavy Hobbs and Shaw reunion, get The Rock, a lot of FaceTime. And then in the third movie, I said it would be a goddamn travesty if they don't have The Rock, John Cena, and Vin Diesel all in a scene, like an action scene together. That just, it would be a wasted opportunity. Like, there has to be some type of giant team up where the crew gets back together and they're able to beat, you know, Dante and this gang of mercenaries that he has. Because, you know, in the beginning of the movie, Dante walks into Cypher's, like, agency, basically turns all of her men against her because he has, like, their family captured. He has, like, background checks on everyone. He knows everyone's family. He knows everyone's loved ones. He knows where they all are. And then he takes Cypher's technology, and he's able to just run wild and do whatever he has. Very well thought out, intricate plan with basically no holes in it, because every time it seems like Dom gets the upper hand again, he's just like, "Ha, I knew you'd do that, Dommy," because that's what he calls him, Dommy, the entire time. So he's giving him nicknames like the Joker does. Batman calls him Bats, right? Batsy. That it's very, if you see it and you're going to, like, it's very Joker-esque. He has this one scene where he's drinking like out of a coconut or whatever, or a pineapple, and he has literally two dead guys sitting in chairs, and he has their faces taped up to make it look like their eyes are open and they're smiling, and he's like talking to them. Very Joker-esque, obviously. So I'm not exaggerating with this shit. I'm really not. But this movie was awesome. It was awesome. Again, if you go into these movies and you're like, "Oh my God, this is getting ridiculous. This is so stupid, blah, blah, blah," you take yourself too seriously. Like, sit back, kick your feet up, get some popcorn, and just literally enjoy the ride. It is an awesome movie. Honestly, one of the better story plots that they've had, because Jason Momoa has just been so goddamn good. I don't know if they plan on him. I would imagine if it's going to be a 3-part finale, like it's rumored to be. It is obviously a multi-part finale because there's a huge cliffhanger at the end of this movie. But I'm going to assume it's 3 parts. So if that is the case, I would imagine Jason Momoa is going to stick around for the villain for all three parts, which would be insane. Because it would be kind of stupid for him to be in the second movie and then they beat him and now... Unless it's only a two-parter. If it's a two-parter, then it's a two-parter. But if it's a three-parter, he's going to stick around for a while. The second movie might be just like an off-the-grid rescue op to get everyone back together with the looming threat of Dante kind of popping around like a NPC and being like, ha, I got you now, and then they have to escape. But I don't think there's any going to... Because there was a lot of head-on conflict with Dante, like them physically trying to beat him in this movie, and it just didn't work out. So in the second movie, it might just be like a run. Like, run away, recruit all your guys, build up your rebellion, and then go back after him in the third part as a squad with, like, a plan, you know? So, awesome movie, super entertaining. Vin Diesel is a mastermind, the way he has led this franchise, the way it's gone. Shout out Michelle Rodriguez as well. She's been there from the beginning. R.I.P. Paul Walker, love him. Yeah, Momoa was... Like, you could tell he was having a lot of fun with that role, man. He was awesome. I'm excited to see The Rock come back into the fold after he had... It was great, Mark. Unless something suddenly changed with The Rock where he was like, sure, maybe I will do it, and then they just wrote him into the post-credits scene. Or it was just like a long, a prolonged, like, PR stunt between him and Vin Diesel to be like, oh, The Rock's not going to be back. The Rock's going to be back. And then the end credit scene pops in and it's The Rock is back. He's like, you some bitch. He says that at the end. I love it, dude. So unless that was just a whole long PR stunt, that would be mastermind type shit. Like, seriously, just diabolical mastermind stuff. Very cool on that front. But if it was just like The Rock had a change of heart and he wanted to come back and make a ton of money and have some fun doing it, then so be it. I'm fine with that too, either way. But I like to think it was a PR stunt and they never actually had any type of beef. All right, go see Fast 10. Guardians, I'm going to see sometime this week, I promise, which it's too late really to do a review on that. I'll probably just do a little snippet of it, assuming I actually follow through and see it this week. Again, I hear it's great, so I'm excited for that. But that'll do it for this episode from my point of view. Thank you all very much for listening. I appreciate you as always. And enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy Memorial Day. Have a fun, safe Memorial Day weekend. And I will talk to you all next Tuesday. See the sun. Sorry.